Hello and welcome to Verbatim. I'm Michelle Rayner.
When the war broke out and news was brought to Stalin, he said, no, this is the end. Lenin left us social stage and we stuffed it. And he left room, got in a car and drove away to his dacha somewhere outside of Moscow. About 5 or 6 days after Khrushchev and some other members of Politburo, they went to see Stalin at his dacha. When they walked in the room, Stalin was drinking and hiding. He just could not get over that Hitler had tricked him.
Над нашей родиной нависла серьезная опасность.
Only 11 days after the outbreak of the war, Stalin broke his silence. He addressed Soviet people with the following words. Товарищи, граждане, братья и сестры, comrades, citizens, brothers and sisters, soldiers of our army, I am addressing you, my friends. It's the first time that he addressed people as brother and sisters. That was very, very strange.
Today we present the first of a two-part program featuring the story of a man who, given the events of the first 20 years of his life, should not have lived to tell his tale today. Eugene Wilson emigrated to Australia from Eastern Europe in 1950, in the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. He first worked in a factory here, assembling radios, and later set up his own one-man business, providing sound transfers for film and TV production. This is how producer and interviewer Brian McKenzie first met Eugene, and over time came to hear his story. Born in Ukraine in 1924, Eugene's earliest memories were of his grandfather's farm, of wide-open wheat fields filled with sunlight. Then came the Red Committees, and his first meeting with history. Eugene's father had spoken out against the Bolsheviks and was in hiding. And soon, Eugene and his mother were thrown off the family farm and became refugees in their own country. In this first part of Goodbye Ukraine, Eugene Wilson takes up his story 2 years into the Second World War, when it said Hitler bit off more than he could chew by invading the Soviet Union.
It was the early summer of 1941. It was a Sunday, and it was one of those relaxed atmosphere. And when I was going through the square, I noticed that certain people were dashing, some were even running, but in different directions. I kept on walking, and then I heard distant voice of very well-known announcer of the Radio Moscow, Yuri Levitan. When Levitan spoke, there was always something important message from the government. When I came closer, there were a group of people standing, just frozen, listening, and Levitan was announcing, this morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, German troops cross our borders, heavy fighting going right from the Leningrad right down to the Black Sea. In other words, it was war. The news of war must have been spreading very rapidly across the town. I found my mother, she heard the news already. She said to me, she said, Zhenya, I don't know what's going to happen now. Of course, they will take you to the army. Well, Mama, I don't think so because I'm underage yet. She said, look, they will take you. As they took your father, he never returned from Kolyma, you will never return from war. The outbreak of war brought me unexpected and welcome opportunity to have my own violin. Our college has received some 20 or 30 violins that were evacuated from, I think it was town of Slavyansk. My music teacher, he asked me to have a look at them, see in what state they are. I spent hours and hours putting new strings on violin. Some were missing parts. There was one particular one that seemed to me a very good sound. I said if I could have a land of it. So at last I had a violin and I played as quietly as I could. We used to play popular tunes. But when examination will come, I had to play Invitation to the Dance by Maria von Weber. When that was finished, my teacher came up to me and he said that Eugene, she done a good job. In about 5 months after the outbreak of war, sometimes in November of 1941, Konstantinovka was under the threat being occupied by Germans. And scorched earth policy was being implemented. Anything that could not be taken out of town cannot be left to the Germans, so it had to be destroyed. So we had these constant fires in the town, explosions. I fell ill. My mother managed somehow to get a doctor. The doctor came and she said that you have to stay inside. And in the very last days of Soviet rule, special NKVD troops, they were sweeping through the town, just seeing that everyone who was capable to join the army to fight were evacuated. Suddenly, the chap in a blue outfit with machine gun burst in our room and he said, well, what you doing here? Why aren't you marching east? And my mother said, look, he is ill. He can go out and here is a certificate from doctor. All right, get bloody well soon and make sure that you are marching east. And he left. I had to find some food because there was no food available anymore. A few kilometers away from our place, I went to the silos. What I found there, everything was blown up previously before the Red Army retreated from the town. And I managed to get about half a sack of this burned wheat and take it home. I went back again second time and got some more. By this time, they were in town, there was no governing bodies, everything was left to looters, and was a general anarchy. I was in the center of the town, and I saw the first German troops coming in. There was quite a number of onlookers, of course. Some were looking with the fright. Some had a quite welcoming attitude and they waved their hands to German soldiers. Troops stopped for whatever reason and there was a loud exchange of German cigarettes and Russian tobacco between the Germans and the Russians. At this time, my mother was offered by her Jewish friend to move into a house as they were leaving, they were going east. So we moved out to this particular house. I think a few days after Germans walked in the town, there was a knock on the door and suddenly a burly German soldier came in and he started to shout at us. And he went through the house, through the kitchen, looked in the saucepans looking for food, and brought a couple items. And then he came to me, he grabbed me by the shirt and shaking me and saying, Yut. And the mother was just petrified. She just stood there, couldn't do anything, couldn't say anything. So I was bewildered. I didn't understand what he meant. Next day I found out someone pointed to this particular house that we stayed in, that it was a Jewish house and there must have been a Jewish family living. Well, as soon as the town was occupied, I think immediately there was an order for all citizens of Jewish nationality to gather at a particular place for a settlement. The German trucks used to take those people in the outside town and shot them in one of the ravines. Children were poisoned simply, German soldier, just putting some yellow stuff on the upper lip of a child, and the child within a few seconds or minutes was dead. My mother probably decided to stay, not to move east, from the reasoning that it can't be worse than the Germans, just to see what future will bring. So I took my way to the Miller. The arrangement was simple. In my case, he said, "All right, look, if you wish, you can work all night, and I won't take any flour from you." So I worked all night in a mill. In the morning, he gave me half a sack of flour, got it home, and as soon as my mother started to make pancakes, there was in the door, there was a German gendarme and a local policeman. "You got any food here in the home?" And before I could say anything, he saw this half a sack of flour on the floor. So they collected it. They put it on a horse-driven cart, on which were already few sacks of various food. So obviously they were going through the streets and going from house to house and collecting some food for a German army. Now, this time, there was a knock on the door. A German officer walked in, and he said that he wants to have a look at the premises. So he went right through the rooms of the house, and then he came back and he says, "There will be two German officers living here." Next, there come two German officers. One of them introduced himself. He said that his name was Richard Zimmerman, and his friend, I do not remember his name, what it was, and he said that we are going to live here. So they brought their rifles and hand grenades, and they started to make themselves comfortable. Richard was quite friendly chap. He was medical officer, and he was working in a local hospital, attending, obviously, to German wounded. He was extremely busy. He used to leave in the morning and come late at night from the hospital. Oh, I told him the story that we had a visit from German soldiers and German gendarmerie and so on and so on. They were quite violent. And he listened to me, and then he said, "Okay." And he went outside and wrote with the chalk on a gate in a Gothic style, something in German. So I asked him, "Richard, what have you written there?" And he laughed and he said, "No Jews living here." Winter of 41-42, Hitler's blitzkrieg in Russia just fizzed out. Such a snowstorms that when German soldiers used to come to change through the night, they used to find them frozen to death, still standing there against the fence or just lying in the snow. There was no fuel anymore because the coal mines stopped working. So people were burning fences, fruit trees. The Germans, to protect their soldiers against frostbites, they devised sort of a shoe like a galosh, but woven out of the straw. So we had a full town of German soldiers walking in these huge yellow galoshes. One early morning, I was standing in a bread queue, like in the good old Soviet times. Suddenly, there was a huge German truck. Soldier jumped off, come up to the queue, and quickly said, do, auf, which meant that, all right, you, jump on a truck. So they took us to railway station. There was an interpreter, and he said, well, now, look, fellas, there will be a train with the German, wounded German soldiers. You will have to carry them on the stretchers from the train. And he said, anyone who will drop a stretch will be shot on the spot. So there was a train. We have unloaded quite a number of German soldiers. From the third story, we had to take down iron beds and load them on the trucks so that the beds could be taken to the hospital. I was coming down from the third floor holding in my hands over the shoulder the iron frame. And when I come down to the ground floor, I felt that I hit something, and there was a very funny sound of spring going toing. Suddenly there was a shout. I dropped the frame on the truck, turned around, and there was an officer holding his head with the blood running down his face. So I just froze. I was petrified. He was looking at me, shouting, and I thought, well, next time he will reach the bloody pistol and let me have it. The German soldiers made sure that we stay on the truck, and beds were taken to the hospital. And we start to unload them, and at the first opportunity, I just nicked off. When I told my mother what had happened, she was petrified and she was crying. She said, you stay at home, don't go outside, don't tell Richard anything about it, just stay put. Once Richard came from hospital and he said, Eugen, do you know where we can buy, where we can get milk? Chap that had a cow. Yeah, there is a place. He took a few packets of cigarettes and we went to this place. It was a small house, very poor people. The man of the house had a tip of his nose rotten away. And Richard said, ask him what happened to him. He explained that he was working somewhere in the field and pricked his nose with a straw. And then he had infected, and there was no medicine and so on, and he lost the tip of his nose. So Richard said, tomorrow I will get you ointment. You'll bring that ointment to him and tell him that he has to put it on, and then if he hours, wash it off or whatever, put it on again and put it on again. So they gave us a container of milk. Richard left his cigarettes there. Next day, I came with the ointment to this, gave it to the old man. And then within few weeks, I met that man. His nose was healed. The top was missing, but his nose was healed. And he said that he was so grateful, and if you see the German officer, tell him from me, thank you very much. Richard, he used to bring packets of this Russian tobacco. Eugen, look, go and swap it for a bread or sell it or whatever. On a few occasions, he would bring some bits of food from the hospital and give it to my mother, because the whole town was without food. My mother thought that Richard was a decent man. He was not like typical German soldier, arrogant, abusive. As an individual, he was a gentleman. Hermann Göring, he said that, well, time is now for a German worker to take the gun in his hands, and his place has been taken by Russians. That was how I finished in Germany. It was early spring, and one day I was stopped by a German officer. They demanded identity papers. I shout, and he handed a bit of paper to me, and he said, tomorrow you're going to Germany. So I come home, I told my mother, and of course she was horrified. So next day, I was at assembly point. There were about 200 young boys and girls of my age. My school friend, Andrei, he was going to Germany as well, so we kept together. And when we set off from assembly point to march out of the town, suddenly I heard someone was calling me. I turned around and I saw my mother standing on a corner and waving her hand. So I stopped, and my mother, she was crying, and she was holding in her hand a small parcel. She said, "Jenny, you have forgotten this." I said, "What is it, Mama?" "It is a cloth brush. And there is a cup, extra cup for you." In the meantime, a German soldier was pushed me away. My last memory of my mother, she was standing there almost with a stretched out hands crying. And the German soldier pushed me back in there, pushed me in a column. We were marching good half of a day, and I remember we stopped somewhere in the village. So we spent the night in the barn. Next morning, we marched again. It was early spring. The snow was still patchy in the fields, but mainly the earth was mushy. It was very hard to walk. German soldiers, they had their boots right up to the top in the mud. And by the end of the second day, we have arrived to Stalino town, regional capital. Next morning, we were loaded in trains, good trains, and the doors were bolted, and we left Stalino. When we crossed river at Dnieper, someone said, "Look, fellas, have a look through, you know, these small windows at the top of the carriages. We are leaving Ukraine. We are crossing in Poland." And I remember I said to myself, "Goodbye, Ukraine." There was no food, no water, no stops for a toilet, just right through. And there was no stop anymore until we reached Berlin. The camp itself was in Kaulsdorf, so-called Berlin Kaulsdorf. It was a former French prisoners of war camp. After there was made some arrangement between Germany and Vichy government, French prisoners had gone home. And next day we had to go to work to the factory where the rest of the camp was working. Everyone was photographed, and everyone was given number. My number was 3-6-8-6-8, I think. That was riveted to the lapel of my jacket. And next day or so, we marched together with the rest of the camp to work in a factory.
Eugene Wilson recalling the German invasion of Ukraine in World War II. Next week, we hear of his time in a labour camp in Berlin, where he met his wife Tanya, and their eventual escape in the final days of the German defeat and the liberation by the Allies. The interviewer today was Brian McKenzie. I'm Michelle Rayner. Technical production today was by Chris Lawson and Kerry Dell. Join us for more life stories this time next week here on ABC Radio National. Coming up now, it's Street Stories.